The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Lots to get to on today's program. Also, don't forget we have the Cardiff Pack coming up on Sunday night and then Monday night as well, or I guess Sunday afternoon to be precise, and then Monday evening. So we'll have some updates for you on Monday, and we'll probably be talking about it some on Tuesday as well when we return to the Ed Stone studio. But right now, as I said yesterday, the plan is to broadcast live on Monday from what we hope will be a quiet hotel room down in Cardiff. On today's show, we're going to be getting into God's way of life. That sounds awfully broad, I know, but Herbert Armstrong, as many of you know, often talked about the way of life, the fact that God's law became, or rather his way of life became, the laws that we study and endeavor to observe. So we'll try to focus in on some statements from the Seven Laws of Success and bring to our minds some really encouraging scriptures. Well, after watching the news from yesterday, last night on through to this morning, you can certainly see why James Comey and Bob Mueller are best of friends. They're the best friends. Comey, of course, is the one who leaked the internal memos about his discussions with the President of the United States, and all of that, he admitted, was to trigger an investigation. And sure enough, it worked, that plan. It did trigger an investigation. And who was it that was appointed as special counsel? Well, it just happened to be Jim Comey's best friend, Robert Mueller. If you remember Comey's ill-advised news conference from July of 2016, if you remember, that was the one, of course, where he brought to mind all the facts that proved Hillary Clinton was guilty, but she wasn't really guilty. He changed the gross negligence clause to extremely careless. So after laying out all these facts showing her guilt, he then told the world in that 12 or 15 minute conference that she was innocent. Now yesterday, Bob Mueller, he had his Jim Comey moment. It was just reversed because this time the subject is Donald Trump. In 2016, they laid out facts establishing guilt and then announced she was innocent. Yesterday, Bob Mueller laid out absolutely no facts establishing Donald Trump's guilt, but then essentially said he's guilty. He's guilty. A total inversion of justice. Abuse of power, that's what this is, and a miscarriage of justice. Look at what was implied yesterday as the American Spectator brought out. Robert Mueller and the art of innuendo. Here he suggests that he's guilty. If he was innocent, I would have said so. And I didn't say so. And so he must be guilty. These two, what a 1-2 punch. Comey and Mueller. American greatness had this to say: this week, the country has been treated to another reminder of how often the twosome operates in tandem. In fact, their prior relationship should have disqualified Mueller from overseeing the investigation into one of Comey's fiercest critics and the man who fired him, President Donald Trump, without Comey helping to fabricate the Trump-Russia collusion narrative in 2016, there wouldn't have been a Mueller investigation into fabricated Trump-Russia election collusion. The two have worked together, hand in hand, 1-2 punch. American greatness says Comey and Mueller share similar traits. the lofty rhetoric about the rule of law, the self-aggrandizement disguised as adulation of the government institutions they run, the lust for power, the superiority complex, and petty thirst for vengeance. All of this, as we've been saying, 2.5 years of investigations, all of this is meant to hide the real scandal. The investigations into how Comey weaponized his agency and Brennan and Clapper and Obama and Lynch. And yesterday, with this news conference, it was yet again another attempt to cover up the real and obvious lawlessness. I want to start with what Bob Mueller said yesterday about the Russians. He had a 9-minute news conference, and he talked about the two parts of his report, which was made public about 5-6 weeks ago. And he said, in the first part, we showed how that the Russians did meddle in our election process. It was, in that sense, compromised. And there were Russians somewhere a long way away from here, somewhere in Moscow, sitting at computer terminals. And they're evidently, well, they're never going to see their day in court, but there were indictments handed down. Russians who were named for meddling, and this is what Bob Mueller said yesterday about the indictments containing those allegations aimed at the Russians, clip 8.
These indictments contain allegations, and we are not commenting on the guilt or the innocence of any specific defendant. Every defendant is presumed innocent unless and until proven guilty.
That's what he said about the Russians. The indictments contain allegations, and we're not even going to comment on the guilt or the innocence of those defendants. We did our job, and this is the way it's supposed to be for a prosecutor. We did our job, we've turned in the indictments, and we're not going to comment about whether they're guilty or not. Every defendant is presumed innocent unless and until proven guilty. That's what he said about the Russians who were mentioned in his report. But not so with respect to Donald Trump. Certainly not so yesterday. Listen to what he said in this first clip. Here's clip 1.
The order appointing me special counsel authorized us to investigate actions that could obstruct the investigation. And we conducted that investigation, and we kept the office of the acting attorney general apprised of the progress of our work. And as set forth in the report, after that investigation, if we had had confidence that the president clearly did not commit a crime, we would have said so.
If we had had confidence that the president clearly did not commit a crime, we would have said so. In other words, we can't confidently state that he's innocent. So here he is now saying he's giving his opinion. He doesn't have the facts. He doesn't have the facts to support it, but he's giving an opinion. Sean Davis at The Federalist said, according to Mueller and his team, charged Russians are presumed innocent. An American president, however, is presumed guilty. And you can see that just by looking at the way the news media ran with that conference yesterday. He's guilty. The presumption is that President Trump is guilty until proven innocent. Not so with the Russians who meddled. We're not even going to actually state an opinion on them. They're presumed innocent unless or until proven guilty. But with Donald Trump, the presumption is guilt until he's proven innocent. Fox News, I forget who wrote this, But it says, in America, prosecutors do not exonerate people. They charge people, or they do not. This was Robert Mueller's job. What you heard yesterday was a prosecutor doing something that the Department of Justice rules strictly forbid. He's not even permitted to do this. And yet he's out there in the open, just like Jim Comey back in July of 2016, taking matters into his own hands. Here's what she did. Here's how egregious it was. And then in the end, but surely there would be no prosecutor that would take this up. And so we're not going to be issuing any indictments. That was Comey in 2016. Fox says about Mueller's yesterday, Mueller's statement Wednesday that he did not exonerate Trump, and Mueller's use of what of that standard are profound abuses of our legal system, especially given the context of his actions. If it was up to Mueller, the entire American criminal justice system would be upended. So much abuse here on display, and really, it's been on display throughout this investigation. You've had old men put in solitary confinement. You had SWAT teams show up to arrest people. Tremendous abuse of power. And for what violations? None of it having to do with Russian collusion. Sean Davis said, as FBI director, he just gives some of the, well, I don't need to quote it, but he talks about how that this has been the history with Bob Mueller. This is the way he's conducted himself, even when he was FBI director for 10, 12 years. You go back to the case in 2001, the anthrax attacks. And this is something that Mueller and Comey were both involved in. And the U.S. government ended up getting sued for $5.8 million. The judgment was in against the government because of how much Mueller and Comey bungled the case. They basically accused two men falsely. And even after the court ruled against him, Mueller came out, this is back in 2001, he came out and said, I don't apologize for any aspect of the investigation. No, we did everything by the book, he said. Even when it's proven in the end that it was totally bungled, he said it would be wrong for me to say there were mistakes made. We didn't mishandle this. We never do. And then, of course, the case that quite a few people know about, or at least those who are criticizing this special counsel, the one where he put people in jail, I think four people in jail. They were framed by their informants, but the FBI trusted the informants more than the ones that were falsely accused. And so here these individuals sat and rotted in prison, basically. One of them, an innocent man, died in prison, waiting for justice, or waiting for this gross injustice to be overturned. And then you have Bob Mueller showing up yet again in 2016, thanks to Jim Comey, quite a 1-2 punch. Bob Mueller showing up again in 2016. This time, he's charged with investigating the Trump administration and its collusion with Russian officials, with Vladimir Putin. And what does he do when he's brought on in that position? Well, he immediately hires all of these left-wing Democrat prosecutors, individuals that had been texting one another about how much they hated Trump, how much they hated Trump supporters. Yeah, he brought him on to his team. It was all political from the very beginning. Were you able to get number 14? Here's, again, the last bit from Mueller, clip 14.
If we had had confidence that the president clearly did not commit a crime, we would have said so.
If we had confidence he did not commit a crime, then we would have said so. Greg Jarrett at Fox News, he said, He said, think about what that rationale really means. It's a double negative. Mueller was contending that he can't prove something didn't happen. What if this were the standard for all criminal investigations? Apply it to yourself. Let's say you deposited your paycheck at the bank on Monday, the same day it was robbed. A prosecutor then announces publicly that he cannot prove you didn't rob the bank. So you are neither criminally accused nor exonerated. Jarrett says the burden of proof has now been shifted to you to disprove the negative. How would you feel? You've been maligned with the taint of criminality and no longer enjoy the presumption of innocence. This is the equivalent of what Mueller did to Trump. The special counsel created the impression that Trump might have engaged in wrongdoing because he could not prove otherwise. The art of innuendo. That's what this was. Throwing it out there that he's guilty until proven innocent. Alan Dershowitz, he's been maintaining all along that, at the very least, he's been critical of things that have happened in this all-out assault on Donald Trump, even though he's more from the left wing. But he's maintained throughout this investigation that, at the very least, then, Bob Mueller is objective, and he's not bringing politics into his investigation. Well, yesterday, after that statement from Mr. Mueller, Dershowitz, he changed his opinion. Here's what he said on Fox News last night, clip 11.
What I saw today was him putting his thumb, his elbow on the scale when he said, quote, if we had had confidence that the president clearly did not commit a crime, we would have said so. That was absolutely inappropriate for him to say. It was worse than anything that Comey said when he exonerated Hillary Clinton and then said, but she engaged in extremely careless conduct. Everybody condemned that. This is much, much worse. And it does show that he had a motive to help the Democrats here. There's no other possible motive why he would have gone out of his way to say that. He could have easily said the opposite. If we had confidence that the president didn't commit a crime, we would have said it. If we had confidence that he committed a crime, we would have said it. But no, he emphasized only the possibility the president might have committed a crime. That went well beyond his authority as special counsel. It also showed we never should have had a special counsel. We should have had an objective, neutral, nonpartisan investigative commission looking into the entire effort of Russia to intrude itself into the 16 election and continuing to the 20 election and proposing efforts to ameliorate that in the future. A special counsel was a terrible, terrible mistake, and I think Mueller's statement today proves that beyond any doubt.
That, I guess that is one positive about yesterday. It makes it obvious that this was a terrible, terrible mistake from the beginning. And it's clear now that he's trying to help the Democrats in the House of Representatives. Look, I don't have any evidence, so all I can do is practice the art of innuendo out in the public for all to see. Now you House Representatives, you've got to take this and run with it. Dershowitz said in a column at The Hill, he said, supporters of Mueller will argue that this is not an ordinary case, that he is not an ordinary prosecutor, and that the president is not an ordinary subject of an investigation. They are wrong. The rules should not be any different. In other words, I skipped over the first part, but he's saying, look, it's violating the rules of the DOJ, the Constitution. And people on the other side would say, yeah, but this is different. This is a president who's unhinged. This is no ordinary investigation. They're changing the rules. This is their way. They change history. They change culture. There's no such thing as equal justice under the law. Not anymore. Not with them. As far as they're concerned, he's guilty. until proven innocent. Dershowitz says, shame on Mueller for abusing his position of trust and for allowing himself to be used for such partisan advantage. Shame on him for abusing that position. And then to see, it's not just that he had a motive to help the Democrats. You see the way that Gerald Nadler rushed to the microphone as soon as the conference is over with a prepared statement. You see the collusion there on open display. Collusion with the Democrats. I should have had someone look into how many minutes it was before we saw Nadler with his prepared statement. They knew what was going on. It was a surprise announcement yesterday. But they knew what was going on, the House Democrats. And I suspect Brennan and Clapper and Comey, they all knew what was going on as well. And oh, by the way, William Barr, he's up in Alaska. Did you know that? He's nowhere near the scene. He's the Attorney General. I'll come to that later. But first, listen to Gerald. He's the head of the House Judiciary, the Democrat, the ones that want to impeach President Trump. At least many of them do. And here was Nadler's prepared response yesterday following the news conference with Bob Mueller. Clip 4.
With respect to impeachment question, at this point, all options are on the table and nothing should be ruled out. What Special Counsel Mueller said loud and clear today for the American people is that President Trump is lying when he says no collusion, no obstruction, and that he was exonerated. If Mueller wanted to exonerate the president from having committed the crime, he would have said so. Instead, and he says he would have said so. Instead, the special counsel makes clear that obstruction of justice, which he found substantial evidence of, is a serious crime that strikes at the core of our justice system, and that the Constitution points to Congress to take action to hold the president accountable. That's exactly what we will do. The president's response to repeatedly lie to the American people and ignore all congressional subpoenas is immoral and unlawful. No one is above the law. And we will hold the president accountable.
That's his prepared statement. And they were all reading from the same talking points. They all got the memo. They knew what was coming. All the presidential candidates, Senator Cory Booker, he said there's a legal and moral obligation to begin impeachment proceedings immediately. Elizabeth Warren, she saw this as an impeachment referral. We've got to impeach him. Kamala Harris, we need to start impeachment proceedings. It's our constitutional obligation. They were taking their cue from Bob Mueller. He couldn't get the goods, so he's handing it off to the House. Beto O'Rourke, he's calling for consequences, accountability, and justice. And he said that impeachment was the only way. Seth Moulton, he's running for president too. I don't know who he is. But he said that impeachment hearings should begin tomorrow. Listen again to, in fact, they asked Gerald Nadler, well, what about making Mueller testify? And this was Nadler's response to that question, clip 5.
It's very important to be clear on what he told us, on what the special prosecutor told the American people. He reaffirmed what was in the investigation, which was in the report about the investigation, which found substantial evidence that Russia attacked our political system, that the Trump campaign benefited from Russia's interference, that Trump and those around him repeatedly welcomed Russia's support, and that throughout the investigation, Trump sought to obstruct justice and undermine Mueller and the investigation over and over again. The special counsel did not exonerate the president from having committed a crime. DOJ policy prevented Mueller from bringing criminal charges against the president. So the president is lying about the special counsel's findings, lying and saying that the special counsel found no obstruction and no conclusion. And I should add, the attorney general is lying about that too. That is serious, and we will take action to hold the president accountable for his misconduct. Again, I'll repeat, no one, not even the president, is above the law.
No one except Bob Mueller. He's above the law. No congressional oversight needed for him. Now, they were calling for it a week or two ago. After they get the report and they don't get what they want, initially they say, well, then he's got to testify. And they've had these negotiations going on behind the scenes, Bob Mueller and the Democrats. And yesterday it was decided, the Democrats decided, well, we don't really need the testimony anymore. We got what we want. We got what we wanted. He went up there in front of the press, and I mean, he established the parameters. He wasn't going to take any questions. Think about reporters shouting down the President of the United States and not even letting him finish. Or accusing him in the middle of a press conference or refusing to give up a microphone. We've seen all of that the last 2 years. But yesterday, oh, these reporters, so respectful. Sitting there quietly. No questions. Okay, no questions. That's fine. No questions from reporters. No testimony before Congress. He's just able to ride off into the sunset now. He's retired. He's leaving the DOJ. He's probably leaving before William Barr even gets back in town. That way he won't have to confront the Attorney General, whose first question, I guarantee you, will be, why did you lie to America? Why did you lie in that press conference? I'll come to that in a second. But what about congressional oversight? You'll notice they're not calling for that anymore because this is the next phase of their plan. He didn't get the goods. So now we move on to impeachment. And what we need for him to do really is to go out there and say he needs to take his report and actually advance it one step further. Let me remind you, I'm restricted by this, this, and this, and the Constitution calls for the next phase, which is impeachment. Whatever deal he worked out with the Democrats, you can see why he wouldn't want to testify, because he'd be cross-examined. There's Republicans on the House Judiciary Committee as well. And they would have been asking him, well, when did you conclude there was no collusion? Did you know before the midterm elections? When you chose your team members, why so many left-wing prosecutors? Why Hillary donors? Why'd you pick the one that's that was at Hillary's campaign victory? What was supposed to be a victory? And if you're so concerned about Russian misinformation, then why didn't you even investigate the Steele dossier? That was full of misinformation. And the sources were Russian. Barely even mentioned in the Mueller report. And then why the two standards of justice? He didn't want to answer these questions. In fact, he said yesterday, I don't want to testify. And if I do, I'm staying within the parameters of the 448-page report. I'm not going outside those boundaries. If you force me, if I get subpoenaed and I have to, I'm not going to be answering anything. Certainly not anything like what I just questioned there. Sean Davis said Mueller's performance made it clear for all to see that what he ran for the last 2 years wasn't an independent investigation pursuant to the rule of law so much as an inquisition motivated by political animus. Mueller and his team refused to charge prominent Democrats for crimes he charged against Republicans. And he gives all kinds of examples here. He says George Papadopoulos and Michael Flynn were charged with making false statements to federal investigators, while Clinton campaign cronies Glenn Simpson and Christopher Steele's false statements to Congress and the FBI were ignored. So, Mr. Mueller, assuming he would have testified, why the two standards? Why the two standards? Why not Glenn Simpson? Why not Christopher Steele? Why didn't you go after Tony Podesta? Why not Greg Craig from Obama's White House counsel? No, they worked out a deal. There was some collusion going into yesterday's news conference. Barr's out of town. I don't want to testify. Where do we go next? How can we continue on with this witch hunt, this hoax, this coup attempt? Now we know the answer. And the Democrats, as you heard from Gerald Nadler and the former Obama officials, the media, they took the baton and now they're running with it. Here's what John Brennan said yesterday on MSNBC, clip 3.
Well, I think Bob Mueller's public statement today is going to give momentum to those who want to move forward with impeachment hearings. I think there can be no doubt about Mr. Mueller's message that the obstruction of justice issue is not resolved and that there needs to be follow-up action on it. So I do think it's going to give some additional momentum to them, whether or not they're going to decide to do it. As I already pointed out, this is not just a legal issue, it's a political issue, and obviously there are political considerations. But I think the cry for impeachment is going to increase, and it's going to be interesting to see how the White House and Mr. Trump reacts to a very clear and I believe, very pointed statement by Bob Mueller.
That's from John Brennan, the one who hand-delivered the Steele dossier to everyone in Washington, plus their dogs. Those are the Obama officials. They're coming out of the woodwork once again. They're excited. They're giddy, along with their allies in the media. CNN had a round table. I think it was 8-9 people as they were all chiming in about how the president is guilty. That was their takeaway. It's obvious to them. This is CNN from last night, clip 2.
Which the other way to look at it is that he's saying, look, the president, you know, could have committed a crime here, maybe did commit a crime here. Because if he, by saying explicitly, if I could clear him, I would have, the flip side of that is he committed a crime. It's, and I did not have the power constitutionally to pursue it through a trial, and therefore it was unfair to make that public accusation.
And Chan, let me bring you in. Do you agree that the headline here is President Trump likely committed a crime, but I could not charge him because of the legal guidance that sitting presidents can't be charged?
Yes, I think he finally made it crystal clear that they could not charge the Trump. He felt it would be unconstitutional to do so. He was bound by that OLC regulation, and he made that crystal clear.
Office of Legal Counsel, the Justice Department.
He said it would be unfair. He said, not an option we could consider, and since you can't take the president to court, and there'd be no proceeding while he was president, that it would be unfair to the president. But they essentially said, but here it is. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Here's
but,
10 counts of potential obstruction.
Important...
For those of you who do have that option, I didn't have it.
So they're saying he's guilty. But Bob Mueller, he can't go on with an indictment because you can't indict a sitting president, according to the Office of Legal Counsel, according to the DOJ guidelines. Now listen to Bob Mueller yesterday as he was explaining this, how that his hands were tied. This is clip 9.
But under long-standing department policy, a president cannot be charged with a federal crime while he is in office. That is unconstitutional. Even if the charge is kept under seal and hidden from public view, that too is prohibited. The special counsel's office is part of the Department of Justice, and by regulation, it was bound by that department policy. Charging the president with a crime was therefore not an option we could consider.
So what he's basically saying yesterday is that the president is guilty. He's guilty of obstructing justice. But I didn't have the constitutional authority to indict him. So he's hiding behind this DOJ guideline, which says you can't indict a sitting president. So here's what he went on to say, clip 10.
The opinion says that the Constitution requires a process other than the criminal justice system to formally accuse a sitting president of wrongdoing.
So he's paraphrasing the OLC opinion, which says the Constitution says there's another process in which you can accuse a sitting president. And of course, that process is called impeachment. That's Bob Mueller now putting it back in Gerald Nadler's court, saying, go ahead and impeach. He basically is giving the green light. Now, coming back to this DOJ guideline, the Department of Justice's policy that you cannot indict a sitting president. Listen to what William Barr told senators during his May 1st testimony. This is after the release of the report, the Mueller report. And he, of course, well, in first part of the report, there was no collusion. That's something that Bob Mueller established. And then in the second half of the report, Bob Mueller laid out a lot of things, but then didn't recommend any kind of indictment or anything along those lines. This is what William Barr told the senators on May the 1st. So this is clip 12.
And we were frankly surprised that they were not going to reach a decision on obstruction. And we asked them a lot about the reasoning behind this and the basis for this. Special Counsel Mueller stated three times to us in that meeting, in response to our questioning, that he emphatically was not saying that but for the OLC opinion, he would have found obstruction.
That's the Attorney General, William Barr, and there were more people in the meeting. There were several people in the meeting. They were surprised that Mueller didn't reach a decision in part two about obstruction. So they asked him, well, did you not come to a decision because of that OLC opinion, which says that you can't indict a sitting president? And Mueller's response, according to Barr, was no. And he said it several times. Then yesterday, he says, well, that actually was why I didn't reach a decision. You heard what Barr said on May 1st. Go back to April 18th. This is the day that the Mueller report became public. Here's a press conference. And this is the Attorney General again explaining something that you need to know about part two of the Mueller report, clip 13.
On March 5th, we specifically asked him about the OLC opinion and whether or not he was taking the position that he would have found a crime but for the existence of the OLC opinion. And he made it very clear several times that that was not his position.
He made it very clear several times that that wasn't his opinion. So either Bob Mueller is lying, he lied yesterday, or the Attorney General and those that were present with him in the meeting with Mueller on March 5th are all lying. Mr. Mueller came out yesterday and he changed his story. He changed his story. He took the Mueller report and he advanced it further than what the 448 pages went. And now you can see why. Obama's allies and all the people in the media, how they're so excited. I think it's interesting that here he comes out with this surprise announcement yesterday morning. And the Attorney General, of all places, is in rural Alaska. The AP says here, in Anchorage, Barr heard from tribal representatives Wednesday in an Alaska Native Justice Roundtable. Earlier, he met with Alaska law enforcement officials. Says the visit comes the same day Special Counsel Robert Mueller defended criticism from Barr and others that he should have decided whether to charge President Donald Trump with obstruction of justice during his investigation with Russian election meddling. He should have made a decision. He didn't make one. And then yesterday, he gets out there, says he's guilty, the president's guilty, and then he hides behind the DOJ guideline. He says, this is why I didn't make a decision. And it contradicts everything that he said to Mr. Barr just a few weeks ago. Well, you come back to, I'll have to hurry along through here, but you come back to why the president was as angry as he was through these 2 years of nonstop investigations. It is, as my father said recently, if anything, it was because he was trying to obstruct a terrible injustice. Geraldo Rivera made the same point yesterday. This is clip 6.
Bill Clinton lied under oath. He was caught.
Yeah.
Perjury. He lost his law license. Nixon lied, covering up a burglary that was committed. What did Trump do other than lose his temper about an unjust investigation? He wasn't obstructing justice. He was obstructing injustice. There was no collusion.
No underlying crime. He was obstructing injustice. And even if you take away the angry tweets, he let it go on. He never did fire Mueller. A lot of people on the left wanted him to fire Mueller so that they could have that as another bit of ammunition. He let it go on, and it went on and on and on. And yesterday, because of that press conference, we now know it's going to continue. And all the talk in Washington over the course of the next several months, over the course of this summer, it's going to be impeachment. Should we impeach or should we not impeach? And they know, the Democrats know, they're taking a political risk, because there's a lot of Trump supporters that are just going to be absolutely beside themselves if they go forward with impeachment. We'll see what happens. But what a spectacle. Yesterday on the program, I mentioned the America Under Attack booklet and the unseen reason why there's so many troubles and why those troubles are intensifying. It's every day. And not just in America. There's a case here in the UK. Boris Johnson facing court over comments made during Brexit referendum. Listen to this from the Telegraph. It says, Boris Johnson will be summoned to court to face accusations of misconduct in political office over claims he was lying when he said the UK gave the EU $350 million a week. So one of his Democratic opponents, or not Democratic, but one on the radical left, the other side, he says, you lied. You lied during some of the campaign, so I'm taking you to court. And now Boris Johnson happens to be the front runner to replace Theresa May. Look at what happened yesterday in Israel. They just had elections just a few weeks ago. This from the Wall Street Journal. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's political future entered a treacherous new period Wednesday after he narrowly failed to form a coalition government, and Israel's parliament voted to dissolve and call a new election. So here are Netanyahu's opponents saying that's it. You didn't get the majority. You missed it by just one seat or whatever it was. So we're calling for new elections. And they just had elections just a few weeks ago. And Netanyahu won. The journal says the fresh vote will force Israel back into campaign mode just weeks after Mr. Netanyahu narrowly won. And it really wasn't even that narrow, as we covered on this program. It was a comfortable victory. The press said it was narrow. The press was saying that he was going to lose the night of the election. Surely he's losing. The exit polls say this, this, and this. Of course, they got it wrong, and he wins. But now here come his enemies in the Knesset, and you've got new elections called for September. It says the scenario is unprecedented, with all previous Israeli parliamentary elections since the country's founding in 1948 leading to the formation of a government. Unprecedented. We're in uncharted waters. You see it in Israel. You see it in Britain. You see it in America. And what does my father say in America Under Attack? Well, I got into that yesterday, didn't I? The fact that Satan and his demons have been cast down and they're confined to this earth. They wrecked the church and now they're moving on to other areas. Now they're seeking to bring down our nations. And look at the success they're having. Look at what's happening in America, in Britain, and in little Israel. Netanyahu was quoted as saying yesterday, these are unnecessary and wasteful elections that no one needs and no one wants. The people had their say. They had their say. The people in America had their say in 2016. The people in Britain, they had their say with respect to Brexit in 2016. And Boris Johnson, for all of his faults, there's plenty of people on both sides that don't care for him. But he wants to make a clean break to honor the will of the people. And then, like Netanyahu says, the people had their say just a few weeks ago. But look at the enemies from within, refusing to accept the results of an election. That's what it's about. Whether it's Brexit, Donald Trump, or now Benjamin Netanyahu. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
A turning point in recent history has gone almost entirely overlooked. Since that time, an unseen cause has brought about national and world troubles in unprecedented fashion. Crises are intensifying as never before. In our generation, we are seeing radical changes to culture, family, education, religion, science, finance, politics, international relations. Everything has been affected. You cannot understand events without recognizing this unseen cause. The United States has been shaken in astonishing fashion. Have you wondered why the world's number one superpower is declining so rapidly? Are you concerned about where the current administration is leading this country? The Bible provides penetrating insight into the invisible cause of society's decline. America is prophesied to fall before it rises again. The Bible also gives extraordinary insight into how that fall will come about. This insight puts the seriousness and urgency of current events in their true perspective. Understand what's in store for America and why. Visit thetrumpet.com and click on the literature tab to request this free, enlightening booklet, America Under Attack.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Herbert W. Armstrong learned long ago that true success is not reserved for those with superior ability, but rather for individuals, any individuals who are willing to abide by a definite set of laws, laws that God set in motion, laws that if we submit to them, if we obey them, they guarantee successful results. They guarantee happiness, productivity, prosperity even. These laws, of course, are outlined in his popular booklet, Seven Laws of Success. More than 3 million people requested that booklet during the 20th century. And it's a booklet that I guess you would consider it old today since it's been around for decades, but it contains a timeless message that you can apply. It contains laws that you can apply to your life right now. Notice Isaiah 55 and verse 6. God defines true success as a way of life. And the prophet here in Isaiah 55 says, verse 6, "Seek you the Lord while he may be found. Call you upon him while he is near. Let the wicked forsake his way, and the unrighteous man his thoughts, and let him return unto the Lord, and he will have mercy upon him, and to our God, for he will abundantly pardon." So turn to God, forsake the ways of sin, and return unto the eternal, return to your Creator. Bring God into the center of your life, your existence, your mind, your thoughts. Start living by the ways of the Bible. In the Seven Laws of Success, Mr. Armstrong said, "It seems almost no one today realizes how and why we were made. What are humans? or what we humans are and why we are, why should we live in ignorance of these basics of knowledge? It says two basic and vital facts are overlooked. While man was made a material being of the dust of the ground, sustained by eating material food and drinking material water, he was made also to need spiritual food and to drink of the living water of God's Spirit. Without these spiritual needs, man cannot be truly and continually happy. Nothing else really satisfies. Those spiritual needs, they're not being satisfied. When you look at the contention and the strife in our nations today, like I covered in the first segment, who's drinking from these waters, these living waters, as Jesus said in John 7? It says in the booklet, the eternal creator who made us in his own likeness is creator of all that is, everything man needs to make life continuously and abundantly satisfying must come from him. That's why we have to draw close to him. He's the source. He's the giver of everything good. Mr. Armstrong says, why must men ignore the true source and try to obtain where there is nothing to be obtained? He says, if I wish to draw clear, sparkling, drinking water from a well, I will go to the well to be filled with such water. Not to one that's empty. You don't want to go to an empty well. Go to the well that's full of water. We have to go to the source of joyous, abundant living. If we really want to experience the good life, if we really want to know what it's like to be filled with joy and happiness, to be content, over in Acts 17, let's just go through a few verses here before we conclude. This is Paul on his visit through Athens. It says here in verse 15, if I can find the verse here real quick, it's not pasted into my notes, this one, Acts 17 and verse 15. It says, and they that conducted Paul brought him unto Athens, and receiving a commandment unto Silas and Timothy for to come to him with all speed, they departed. So here he is, coming into Athens. And then down in verse 24, it says, God that made, here's his speech to the scholars at Athens. He said that God that made the world and all the things therein, seeing that he is Lord of heaven and earth, dwells not in temples made with hands, nor is he served by human hands as though he needed anything, since he himself gives all men life, breath, and everything. That's verse 25. And verse 26 says, and has made of one blood all nations of men for to dwell on the face of the earth, and has determined the times before appointed and the bounds of their habitation. It all started from Adam and Eve, and then it spread out from there. 6,000 years of human history. And God says in verse 27 that they should seek the eternal, if haply they may feel after him and find him, though he be not far from every one of us. Just like Isaiah says in Isaiah 55. If you seek after him, if you forsake the ways of sin and then seek after God, you can find him. You can draw on that source of power and love and a sound mind. Yesterday I talked about walking in the Spirit. Verse 28 says, for in him, in God, in other words, we live and move and have our being. As certain also of your own poets have said, for we are also his offspring. It's a wonderful verse. I've read it multiple times on this program. But here man has been searching and searching and searching for physical things to make him happy, to make him content. Physical things from this material world. And God says you need a spiritual source of power and inspiration. You need spiritual sustenance. You need manna from heaven. Read John 6. You need food, spiritual food. We need to feed on the Word of God. We need to be nourished by it, as Paul said, and filled with His Spirit, as I covered yesterday. It says here in Acts 17, verse 29, "For as much then as we are the offspring of God, we ought not to think that the Godhead is like unto gold or silver or stone, graven by art and man's device." Don't think of God as some material, physical being. God is a spirit being, the great creator God. He brought us all into existence, and we're His offspring. We're His children, made in the likeness and the image of God, made with the potential to be born into His family. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. That's all we have time for, unfortunately, on today's program. If you'd like to email us, though, keep the conversation going, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.